A little bit of downtown blues there in the background as our intro. And I love that stuff. I could sit and listen to that all night long. And it appears that for the second show in a row, all of the buttons have worked. Everything's working. I see levels on the volume meters. Of course, right now, I'm the only one talking. So, I don't know. Jeff, you there?
Just knocking on some wood, hoping this lasts.
Hey, it's a Tuesday night here. Welcome to the Mead House. Once again, this is just a simple show about four simple guys making simple mead and various other things. So we just kind of sit around a table here and yak about making mead, good mead at home. So that's where you need to start. What happened there? Everybody still here?
I'm here.
Still here.
I'm here.
Where was I? Well, we were making mead at home, making good mead at home. You know, a lot of people have, you know, a desire or aspire to start a meadery. And that's all fine and good, but, you know, you kind of got to start out at home, play around with some, you know, some ingredients, come up with some decent recipes, some good tasting recipes, share it with your friends and relatives, get some good feedback, and make good meat at home. That's kind of where it all starts. And I like, and you know, Chris, I kind of like to think that home meat making is kind of where it all starts. This is where you make all your mistakes first, you know, before you want to turn pro you know, do anything bigger with, you know, with your fun. So.
Yeah, I don't want to turn pro.
Yeah, me neither. But, you know, for those of you who are making meat at home, this is the show that that you need to be listening to. So we talk about all kinds of different kind of things about mead making. And gosh, we have covered all different kinds of styles, working on one. We'll talk a little bit more tonight about the Braggot thing. I've made my bourbon selection. We'll get into that a little bit later on. Sizer season is upon us. Chris is going to entertain us some more from Mississippi and talk to us a little bit more about sizers. But first off, welcome to the show, The Mead House, here live on Tuesday nights at 9 o'clock Eastern. You can go to themeadhouse.com and listen in there, or you can go over to TuneIn Radio, just tuneinradio.com, and just type in the search deal there, The Mead House, and it'll come right on up. So, and TuneIn Radio has also got a mobile app for all the various iPhones, Androids, and whatever else is out there, if you want to take us with you. So, with that, if you want to call the show, 818-921-4680, that's the number you need to dial in the house with us tonight. Aaron Martin, Mississippi, Chris Spencer, Jeff Schaus, and my name is J.D. Webb. Guys, we usually like to start out the show. I kind of go around the Facebook group thing there, and I'm up to like, I don't know, there's like six or eight of them now. And I need to hire a secretary or something because it's really getting hard to track all these things. you know, I mean, there's so many of them out there now, including ours. You know, you can go to our Facebook page. It's simply The Mead House. But I found a couple today that I wanted to talk about. One, Ray Stump. I want to throw a shout out to him. Fruit Wine and Mead Making Facebook group. He's got a picture of a 5-gallon carboy of plum mead, plum wine, actually. And he says he used one and a half boxes of plum. Now, I don't know what he means by that. He didn't, go into too much detail about it. But I wanted to throw him out a shout out. And, I love plums. Plums are one of my favorite fruits, any kind of plum. The bright, you know, the red ones, the dark ones. I just love plums, and I can imagine a plum mead. I think that would be the most awesome thing. So that's going on my to do list as far as mead making, and He says he had a friend over and they tasted it over the weekend, and he says it tastes exactly like the plums, only with a little bit of a alcohol taste to it on the nose. He says it's somewhere around 7%-ish or so. Congratulations, Ray. Man, I wish I had a bottle of that here tonight to enjoy as well. But I would look forward to putting a plum mead together myself. Lori Barber. I want to throw a shout-out to Lori Barber, wine and mead-making enthusiast Facebook group. Now, she's got this post up. She's actually making a wine, but I thought, you know what? This stuff would be an awesome mead, and it's called Dragons in Paradise. Now, it's a sugar wine recipe that's featured on, I don't know if you guys ever heard of the Sicilian Prince. Have you ever seen his YouTube videos floating around out there?
I mean, yeah, I've seen it before. I thought you said Floyd the Barber. Who did you say?
Floyd, no, not Floyd the Barber, Lori Barber.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Yeah, Floyd the Barber. Sorry, that was Mississippi. this guy, and I've seen this guy's videos all over the place, Sicilian Prince, and he does it all. He's done meads. He's done kit wines. He does these fruit wines. But this is a fruit wine recipe using tropical fruit blend. Now, it's just a frozen bag of fruit. I suppose you could get it at Costco. I mean, I've seen them at Costco, big 10-pound bags. But he uses 12 pounds of frozen tropical fruit, two large bottles of pineapple juice, and about 11 pounds of cane sugar. Now, if you were to replace that with honey, of course, add your tannins and yeast nutrients, pectic enzyme, the whole nine yards to it, and make a mead out of it. Man, that would be a fantastic summertime mead, maybe a little on the sweet side, semi-sweet even. But he calls it Tropical Dragon Blood Recipe, or Dragons in Paradise. So certainly want to mention the Sicilian Prince out there, since this is where the recipe comes from. But sounds like Lori's putting one together. So good luck with that, Lori. Tell us all about it when you get it all finished, and send us your tasting notes if you would. I'd love to talk about it on the air when you get done with it.
Sorry for calling you Floyd.
Yeah, Floyd. next up, what are we drinking tonight? Let's start off with Aaron tonight. Aaron, what's in your glass?
So tonight, taking a little page from the book of Chris, I know how much Chris loves his tea, but tonight, not doing an iced tea, doing just a nice hot cup of tea. Earlier before the show, we were chatting a little bit about how the temperatures are starting to cool off outside and the humidity is lower. I think I saw on the thermometer it's about 50 degrees already, 50 Fahrenheit here in the Milwaukee area. So I'm warming myself up tonight with a hot cup of chamomile tea.
I got a buddy of mine that lives in St. Paul, Minnesota. He sometimes listens to the show. I talked to him this afternoon, and he said it was 55 degrees at 4 o'clock or at 1 o'clock when I talked to him. And I said, dude, it's like 95 at my house. Jeff, what's going on in your cup tonight?
Well, I heard we were going to be talking about apples tonight, and I couldn't find any sizer for the life of me, but I picked up a couple bottles of this Woodchuck Summertime. It's a hard cider with a little bit of hint of blueberry in it, so it's pretty tasty.
Ooh, that sounds good, yeah. And Mississippi, I mean, should I guess?
Take a guess.
I'm thinking Starbucks.
No, I had to go off the Starbucks. I told you that. I'm drinking the 8 o'clock dark Italian roast. No more Starbucks for me.
No more? Okay. All right. Coffee in Mississippi's cup tonight. Well, old JD's drinking one of his home brews. I popped the top on a pumpkin. I've already drank about half the stuff I made. It was just so good. And I thought, you know what? I need to stop drinking this. I need to let it set a while and see how it matures. And so I popped the top about once a week or so, or about once every 10 or 12 days. And I still have about 3/4 of a case left. And, man, this stuff is just getting better and better and better. So now I'm kind of between a rock and a hard place, I guess you'd say, because I'm having second thoughts on this whole pumpkin thing, about adding pumpkin, you know, to a beer or even to a mead, because I don't know that the pumpkin really adds anything other than a texture, a kind of a smooth-type texture. But as time goes on with this pumpkin beer that I made, I can almost start to taste the pumpkin now. Setting aside the pumpkin, you know, the allspice cinnamon, typical pumpkin pie spices. So I think now that I can taste that pumpkin in there, I think I'm having second thoughts on this whole pumpkin edition thing, because I was ready to just chuck the cans of pumpkin and just, you know, continue on adding the spice only. But, it's cold, it's good. I'm extremely surprised, because, of course, this is a pat on my own back. This is the first beer that I ever brewed. So it's good. I love it.
Nice.
Yeah, you know, and I think I told you when I first went out and I did all the research, and I went everywhere. I looked everywhere, and all the reviews. I got it from More Beer, and I looked at all the reviews and reading through all of those. People were doing different things, like roasting real pumpkins. They were adding canned pumpkin. Seemed like people who had best results were using the simple canned pumpkin, which is, you know, unprocessed, just pure raw pumpkin. No preservatives or anything in it. So that's what I did. And, you know, like I said, when I first tasted the first ball, I thought, well, this is kind of unimpressive, because I don't taste any pumpkin at all. But now it's aging, and of course, you know, this whole thing with mead, with wines, I guess age even does beer some good as well. So, good stuff. We were talking, we kind of got into talking about sizes. It's already the end of September. October is like, what's today's date anyway? I don't even know. October starts. Yeah, it's okay. So like October starts on Saturday, right? And before you know it, it's going to be November. And in many places around the country, apples are already starting to come out. It's going to be apple season here in my part of the country in about 3 weeks. So, you know, debate. Should I, shouldn't I? Talking sizers, real apple juice, or just the store-bought stuff like Mott's.
When's October 1st? Let's see.
Saturday?
Saturday.
Oh, crap. That means I got a mortgage payment due. There goes my next fermentation bucket.
That's some good stuff right there.
I was gonna get a new bucket this weekend, but now I got a mortgage payment due.
Oh, damn.
Maybe next month.
All right. So, sizers, Chris. We left off last week. We were starting to get a little more into it. We were talking about different juices and whatnot, and I think you left off with, you know, it's okay to use something like a Mott's apple juice or a treetop, you know, if you can't get, you know, fresh pressed apple juice. So,
well, we're in a situation where we have to work with what we've got. And so we've got to find ways to make it more appealing. And, you know, if that's what you got, that's what you got. And I'm in the same situation. I mean, I don't have access to, even the varieties that people in other parts of the country might have. This is really not a big apple growing region here. So, I'm limited to farmers markets, grocery stores, and whatever juice I can find. I don't really see anything wrong with it if you're willing to add in some things to make up for what's lacking. I think it would be very, very difficult to make a good straight sizer with what we have, but, you know, who knows? It might could be done.
I wonder, you know, because we also talked about, you know, apples themselves and a typical apple, you know, Granny Smith's you know, potentially using store-bought apples, but selecting some that had a bitter component, some that had the sour component, all the things that you kind of need to, you know, for all of the flavor components that would go into a mead. So,
right.
How do you, I mean, if you get, you know, and typically this would come from, you know, from if you're going to use apple juice and do your own, typically this is going to come from those apples. So how do you get around, how do you duplicate those flavors in a store-bought like Mott's or Treetop? How do you accomplish, you know, the flavor profile that you would get from using you know, regular fresh pressed apple?
Mm-hmm. Well, ideally, you would be able to get your hands on some apples that have these qualities and press the juice. Barring that, you would probably want to start with a store-bought juice, which is going to be primarily a dessert apple. That's going to be your sweet, mostly sweet, like Red Delicious, Gallas, things like that. When you're starting with a base like that, you're missing the sour, you're missing the bitter, and the sharps, so to speak. So, we know we got to look at things. Where do we get those qualities from? Well, we know we can get sharp and sour from cherries, for instance. So you make a cherry sizer. You know, you can get bitter from a lot of different spices, certain allspice, cardamom, if you use enough of those in the right quantities, they can become somewhat bitter. Sometimes something like the pith from an orange peel can add a quality of bitterness to it. Certain tannins can come across as bitter, especially the coarser grain tannins can be quite bitter. So you can start looking at oaking your sizer to get a certain level of bitterness. Maybe start looking at something like a dark, rather than a medium toast oak, look at a dark toast French oak or something like that. Yeah. So there's all sorts of ways that you can approach it. Citrus fruit, I've never used a citrus fruit in a sizer, but I assume that it would probably you could probably get some bitterness from that, especially if you just use the rind with the white pith on it. But yeah, ideally you would want to get a hold of a mix of sweet apples, something sour like some Granny Smith, and then maybe a few crab apples or something like that. Just taking into account what we're limited to here in the States.
Yeah. Jeff.
So there's lots of additions. Yeah.
I'll throw this over to Jeff too. You know, he's our resident judge. Is there a, you know, when you're judging meads, I mean, is there a profile or is there something out there to about sizers as you know, in the world that you live in, as far as being a judge? I mean, how do you approach judging a sizer versus other meats? Or does it?
You know, it's been a while since I've looked at the guidelines for a sizer, so I would not be the person to quote that for rote. But generally, when I'm looking for any kind of a fruit mead, I want a good expression of the honey. I want a good expression of the fruit. And you know, granted, the Mott's or the whatever, like, shall we call them table apples?
Yeah.
You get juice from these days. They may not have the depth of a bitter sharp, or you know, the bitterness you get from adding about 10% crab apple to a mix. But you know, you can still get that that apple perception from it. You can still make a pleasant mead that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you know, we can also toss in some whole apples or chopped up apples. You know, you can get a certain amount of bitterness from the peel and from the cores, and you know, there's a lot of components there that you can sort of take a store-bought juice and kind of build it up, you know. So this is where your imagination has to come in, you know.
There's another approach we could take to this too, kind of along the same lines as we've been talking about with doing the braggots, because there is a line of cider making kits. They come in the basic apple cider. They come in like the cider with pear juice or fruit juice or other things like that. And when you make those, generally you have to add in the neighborhood of 2 or 3 pounds of corn sugar to get the ABV up. You could easily replace that corn sugar with honey and make a pretty decent sizer, I would think, because they've already got a pretty decent balance of juices in there for what is intended to be an alcoholic drink.
Yeah, and I've seen some. I've actually seen people making ciders where they would add enough sugar and they would call it a turbo cider. And I was, you know, get it up 10-12% ABV, and I'm thinking, well, just add honey, and you've got a sizer.
Sure. And I think the idea is this juice will get you to about 2.5-3% by itself, but if you add a decent amount of sugar, you get in that 5-6% drinking range that. You know, most of us are looking for when we crack open a bottle.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I've tried to make a sizer one time, just a straight sizer, apple juice and honey. And with what I had available, I just didn't pull it off very well. So ever since that time, I've been making all my sizers with other additions. And mm-hmm. You know, it sort of comes back to work with what you got. So if all I've got is store-bought juice, or even with what I can crush and press myself, it's still not ideal. So, well, if you're going to work with what you got, then you got to start looking at additions to make. And so, you know, one way, like you said, buy the cider kit. Another way is just put it together yourself with what you can find. Mm-hmm. Sharp, acidic, sour components would be tart cherries, raspberries, even blueberries to some extent. You can get a certain bitterness and earthiness from blackberries. So most of the sizers that I end up making usually end up being a cross between a Melomel or a Metheglin and a sizer.
Sure.
You just really got to spice them up to sort of make up for some of those shortcomings. And I guess you end up with a Frankenstein sizer when it's said and done.
Well, if it tastes good, it's all right, right?
Yeah, it's what it's all about. It's making something that you enjoy to drink. And if you're outside of competition, then what's the point in brewing? You're making something that you and your friends and family enjoy drinking. And so, you know, who's to say that you got to set rules?
Right. And, you know, we talk about categories and mead and the judging categories and stuff, but, you know, it's none of our listeners are by any means required to you know, enter competitions or even to, you know, aspire to enter competitions. I mean, I enter competitions because I want some objective criticism on a mead to make it better. That's the only reason I do this. And, you know, if you are happy making a mead that you and your friends enjoy, more power to you. That's what it's about.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, Jeff, as I understand it, the categories have expanded now so that just about anything you make will fit somewhere. So you can still enter a competition in something similar to an open category or something, isn't it?
There's always been kind of the open or the experimental category. What they have done is expanded some other categories. So, like, as of the most recent revision, they've added a fruit and spice category instead of, like, just a melomel or just a methaglin. So the apple pie spice mead or the other examples that are not coming to my mind right now. Those
caramel apple.
Those combinations of... Sure, caramel apple.
Chocolate orange.
Oh, sure. Something involving a cherry that is not coming to me, but I had heard about
the mollop.
Yeah,
mollop, cherry
mollop.
He's talking about a flavor profile, something like a chocolate cherry type. Talking about the candies.
Well, no, it was a cherry and some kind of a spice that went with it. I don't think it was nutmeg or allspice, but it was kind of a, maybe a short.
Well, there's some cherry habaneros and...
Cherry vanilla.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Cherry vanilla.
Cherry vanilla might have been. But yeah, no, all these meads that, you know, were kind of that open category or that experimental category because they were a little bit of column A and a little bit of column B now have their own category. Because it is a pretty popular category in and of itself, so yeah, they're trying to be they're trying to keep a finger on the pulse of what people are making and what people are enjoying, so that it represents what's being made.
Yeah, they kind of have to do that.
Sure.
A lot of these professional meaderies are coming up with some. Well, I hate to use the word whacked out flavors, but I mean, you know, to the average Joe who doesn't know what it is, you know, Sergio, he puts out this, I think it's called Pepino. It's a,
yeah, with the cucumber.
And the, is that one, but the one I'm thinking about is the one with the, not the habanero, the other one. Come on, damn it.
Jalapeno.
He makes one. Yeah, and I thought that was called Pepino. I might be wrong.
I think Pepino is the one with the cucumber.
It might be. When we were producing the other show, we would get samples of mead sent to us, and then we would talk about them on the air. And Sergio had sent out several bottles of stuff that he was making. And, one was a cucumber, which I thought was, you know, I mean, I love good, you know, my grandmother used to take a cucumber and chop it all up with a little vinegar and water, and a little salt and pepper. Man, I could eat that stuff all day long. Even putting a cucumber in a glass of water. I love that too. So,
While we're talking about sizers, if Michael Fairbrother from Moonlight Meadery happens to be listening by some narrow chance, or if you're a neighbor, if you live next door to Michael Fairbrother and you're listening, run over and tell him to give us a call because I'd like to discuss one of his sizers. You know, Michael makes one of the best-selling sizers in the country. It's an apple pie, and... I'm going to talk about it here in just a few minutes, but I would much rather him tell you about it and describe it if he's listening. So give us a call.
You know, I've got his contact information, and I'll shoot off an email to him and see if we can get him to respond. But Aaron, have you done anything with sizers at all, or experimented with them at all? Or
I haven't actually. I've just been enjoying listening to the conversation here. I think sizer is definitely an intriguing style of mead. I haven't even tried or tasted a sizer, to be honest with you. So I'm definitely interested in kind of hearing the different techniques. And I think one of the things that's always been a little bit intimidating to me about sizers is kind of what we've been talking about, is that maybe the thought process that the best results really need to be obtained by getting some, you know, fresh apples from a local orchard, where, like we've talked about, getting a kind of a mix of some sweeter apples, bitter, sour, and getting a nice fresh pressed, a cider, like an apple cider from that. So it's interesting to hear Chris talk about just going to the store and buying a bottle of Mott's apple juice and kind of going to town with that and jazzing it up a little bit with some other additives. Definitely, I think something that I'm interested in. I think the way that you're describing it, it just makes it a little bit more accessible to those of us who don't have an apple press at home, or for those of you who live in a neck of the woods where it's a little bit more difficult to, you know, obtain, you know, fresh apples like that.
Well, yeah, and just as a disclaimer, I never said that I made the world's best sizer either, and probably I probably never will with store-bought apple juice, but, you know, like I said, you do the best you can with what you got, so.
And it's a way to try the style, too, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, we mentioned, in fact, we mentioned on the show tonight, I mean, there really isn't any hard, fast rules that you have to use one particular can of apple juice over another, whether it's fresh pressed or, you know, even the variety of apples. Now, granted, there may be some varieties of fresh pressed apples that work better than others or produce a different flavor, better flavor, maybe, I don't know, but, you know, I think Chris, you know, I mean, this whole thing centers around whether, and you mentioned it, whether you have access to fresh pressed apple juice, or whether you're stuck, you know, somewhere in the middle of the country where there's no orchards, having to use store-bought Mott Treetop or whatever it might be, Langer's or whatever it might be available, so.
Yeah, and even here in America, even if you have a cider press, you're still not going to come up with what is normally considered the ideal cider to start with, because we just don't have the apples available to us here that they have in Europe. And, you know, especially somewhere like Ireland, where the cider industry is just huge, and it never went away. So there's just literally hundreds of these different varieties of cider apples. And from what I've been told, these apples are not fit to eat. These are not the kind of thing you could go and take a bite out of them and eat them. Yeah. They're horrible.
No, but, not at all. That's my understanding too.
Yeah. These are, you know, it's sort of like, cooking apples. You know, I don't really care about going and eating a crab apple, but when you cook them, they're good. And, it's sort of like the cider apple. So still, even with a cider press, we're not going to get the ideal juice to start with, because, we're still limited to what we can get as far as apples. And, you know, we've got the sweet component covered entirely. Everything from Fuji, Gala, Red Delicious, I mean, you name it. It goes on and on. But when we start getting into the sharps, you know, what have we got to look at? Well, Granny Smith, Gravensteins, I guess, could sort of go with. They got a little sharp character, but they're mostly sweet. And then when you get into the bitter category, which should make up, from what I understand, about 10% of your juice, then we're really limited. Then we're looking at things like heirloom crab apples and things like that. So, which still, they're bitter, but they're not ideal. They're not really cider apples. So,
well, and that English cider, I don't know if you've, you know, I mean, there's limited selections at the couple of liquor stores that I go to, and I've had a couple of English ciders, and they are way different than these hard ciders that are produced here in the United States.
I love them. There's two Irish ciders called, one is Magners and the other is Bulmers. And the Magners to me is just the best cider I've ever had.
Yeah, Magners, I cannot, neither one of the, actually the three liquor stores that I go to do not carry the Magners. What was the other one you mentioned?
It's Bulmers, B-U-L-M-E-R-S, Bulmers.
I'll have to look for that one. That's a world of difference. And at some point this has got to translate over into the mead making or making sizers too, because, the English, the stuff that they make here in the United States is almost like a soda pop to me. And they tend to all taste the same. Cinnamon. I mean, some of them have these adjuncts that they put in, after the fact. So you get these different flavors. But the bottom line is, to me, they all taste like soda pop. Whereas an English cider, I mean, it's dry, it's crisp, they're not overly sweet,
Well, I think you may not like the sizers we do either, because, there's a reason why they're doing that. They're making up for those qualities that are lacking in the apples.
Well, and the other thing too here, I mean, sweet sells. Sweet will outsell anything before, I mean, if I laid a sweet onion on the table in front of you alongside of a piece of chocolate cake and handed you a knife and a fork, you can eat that chocolate cake and eat some more before you, or want some more before you ever take a bite out of that sweet onion. Now, if I took that onion, wrapped it up in foil, and threw it in the barbecue for 30 minutes, you'd probably eat the chocolate cake and the onion and thought they were both great.
Talking about sweet ciders and sweet sizers, a very common technique that I've noticed a lot of people doing is adding some apple concentrate after the fact in secondary to boost the apple flavor. And that's due to the lack of cider apples that we have. They don't tend to impart as much apple flavor as a true cider apple does. So you have to make up for that somehow. Naturally, when you add the apple concentrate, well, you're going to add sweetness as well. So I don't know that it's being done just because that's what sells. I think it may be being done mostly because trying to make up for inferior apples.
Sure. Jeff, what's your preference when it comes to a sizer? Sweet or semi-sweet, or what would you prefer?
Oh, honestly, I like it a little on the dry side. Maybe off-dried semi-sweet on the high end. I mean, the woodchuck is notoriously a little on the sweeter side. The more English ales, the more English ciders, like that the Irish Magners or Strongbow, I think, is an English one as well. They tend to be a little on the drier side, a little on the tartar side, and that's usually where my taste lies.
Aaron, what about
it's
you?
So
you
smooth, have you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, for me, I'll tell you, I don't think I've ever had a sizer, but there is a cidery here in Wisconsin, I think in Stevens Point, if I'm not mistaken, called Cider Boys. And little quick story about their cider. A few years ago, there's this, it's called like the Wisconsin Beer Lovers Festival. And it's one of these deals where you go and you pay however much to get in, and then they give you a little sample glass, and you go around from tent to tent trying all of these different beers. So my wife and I went, and we got our little sample glass, and we were drinking all different kinds of, you know, porters and IPAs and stouts and these heavy, heavy beers. And the festival is open for like 4 hours. And come, you know, hour two, hour three, that's a lot of drinking beer. So we came across this Cider Boys tent, and I remember it to this day. They had this peach apple cider, and we, after just all of that heavy, heavy beer, had a little taste of that, and it was very bright. It was very crisp. I do think it is a little, their ciders definitely tend to be a little on the sweeter side as well. But this one just, it had just the right balance of kind of tartness and acidity to match up to that sweetness. And I'll tell you, it just cut through all of that heavy beer flavor that we had kind of been bogged down with, and just kind of brightened up the palate a little bit. So, I think definitely when I think of a good apple cider and that type of flavor, kind of the bright crispiness is kind of what I'm drawn to as well. And I'd have to think, you know, when I get to the point of experimenting with sizers, that's probably where I would migrate to. That's probably what I would look for as well.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like we're running the full gamut here. I'm kind of with Jeff. I prefer something on a drier side. And I've said it over and over again. I'm not a soda pop drinker. I don't drink sweet tea. Sorry, Chris. Sweet drinks. I don't drink hot chocolate. None of that kind of stuff. So it's a very rare occasion when I drink anything sweet here. So, you know, for a sizer for me, that kind of brings up another point here. Let's talk about honey for a minute. You know, I mean, I got this wildflower honey that I get from my local source. And as Chris can attest, this is some of the sweetest honey you ever want to taste. I mean, it's the sweetest honey I have ever had. So that kind of worries me a little bit. It's got a nice floral component to it. What kind of honey would work best in a sizer to complement the apple? Because, I mean, you definitely want that apple. I want that apple flavor, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, the absolute best honey that I ever used in a sizer was actually apple blossom honey. And it is notoriously difficult to find for me. But if you can find some, it has been the best that I have ever had. And probably the second best honey in a sizer has been Black Locust.
Black Locust.
Black Locust honey. It's also known as Acacia honey. Those are the two best I've ever had in a sizer, bar none.
Wow.
But with that said, orange blossom and wildflower both make very good sizers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because I would, you know, I mean, I just, kind of the other component to this whole sizer making thing here, of course, is going to be the honey. So,
I think some of the nut blossoms, like macadamia nut blossom, maybe almond blossom, some of those go good in sizers. I've never used the almond, but I have used macadamia nut blossom in a honey, and it really in a sizer, and it turned out good as well.
Yeah.
Well, incidentally, part of the reason that apple blossom honey is so hard to come by, generally it is not honeybees that are pollinating the apple blossoms. The apples bloom a little too early in the season for that. It's actually bumblebees that do the bulk of the pollination for apple trees.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so those are
occasionally you will find some in small quantities, but it's very difficult to find in any quantity at all.
Yeah, conditions have to be kind of just right for the honeybees to be up and out and getting things done at the time when the apples are still blooming. Either that or you have to find somebody with a lot of late cropping relate to pollinating apples.
I was even thinking something along the lines of a clover honey, too. I kind of like clover honey.
You know, to be honest, I actually have a... I got a barrel of some clover and basswood honey from Wisconsin that has a little bit more of an acidic aftertaste.
What did you just say? You got a barrel?
Well, not a barrel, a bucket.
Oh, okay.
A big 5-gallon bucket.
I was going to say, if you got a barrel, dude, I'm leaving tonight. I'm coming to your house with a bucket of my own. Barrel.
I am well, not.
Some of the clover.
I wish I was wealthy enough honey. To buy it.
Go ahead, Chris.
Most of the clover honey you find in the grocery is far from what real clover honey is like. Like a white clover honey makes an absolutely fabulous mead.
Yeah.
If you've never had a pure, honest white clover honey in a mead, you need to try it. It's great. But the stuff in the grocery store that they call clover honey is very different.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I think if I was to use something like that, I would shop online and try to locate some, not that the stuff in Costco is bad honey. I mean, it tastes perfectly fine and there's nothing wrong with it. But like you say, I don't think it's quite the real deal.
To be fair, it is the real deal, but it has been so blended and so processed that it's,
it's made
a little bit generic.
Yeah, and sometimes you get them and they have that generic taste to them. Because, frankly, I've gotten orange blossom honey from the supermarket in a little honeybee thing, and pick up a thing of wildflower next to it and bring them home and they almost taste the same, you know, because they've been
processed.
Whatever, you know.
There's a place in Texas that sells orange blossom honey to the big chain stores, and they're just a bottler is all they are. Since they haven't offered to sponsor our show, I can talk bad about them. And it's just awful. I mean, it's not anything close to orange blossom honey. If they want to sponsor our show now, we can talk about that.
Yeah, we can talk about that.
Yeah.
So if you're paying attention down there in Texas.
I didn't mention any names.
No. Mississippi, you got kind of a special project. Are you ready to divulge any more information or...
Before we get into the special project, though, I did want to mention, I talked about Michael Fairbrother's sizer that he sells so much of. Yeah. And from what I understand from talking with him, this is pretty much a year-round thing. And it's an apple pie sizer, and it's the simplest thing in the world. It's apple juice, honey, fermented, and then in secondary, it's vanilla bean and cinnamon stick, and that's it. There's nothing else, no tricks. He makes it with 71B, and he says the secret, I guess, sort of, is that he uses a Vietnamese cinnamon and
versus the Ceylon.
Yeah, it's a Vietnamese cinnamon, and I forget right offhand the type of vanilla bean that he uses. That's why I was hoping he might call in, because he can tell us so much more about it. But he makes this stuff year round. It's probably the one sizer that sells the most in the United States, I would imagine. Yeah. And, it is absolutely wonderful. And, And the funny thing is, it's the one thing that I've never made. And so I'm seriously thinking that when apple season does get here in full swing, I think that's probably going to be my yearly sizer this year, is the apple pie.
Well, and vanilla beans come, you know, I mean, there's Madagascar, there's Indonesian, they come from different places, you know, around the globe, and each has their own, sometimes vastly different flavor profile. I can't, you know, off the top of my head, I can't name them off, but there's three or four that I typically use here at the house when I make extracts with. And depending upon what liquor you use, they can impart a different, I mean, it's all vanilla. You still get that vanilla base, but the aftertaste and the little finer profiles that you get out of it, are wildly different, from one vanilla bean to the next. So I could see where that would be a point. So.
I'll email Michael. That's the one thing that I've always enjoyed about Michael Fairbrother, is that he's so forthcoming with what he does. He will share all of his recipes, and he likes to help out home brewers. He still home brews himself, though he's got one of the most successful meaderies in the country. So. I remember him saying, but I can't for the life of me remember the kind of vanilla. I've got this little special project that I'm putting together, and it's in the planning stages now. But we were talking about before the show that I had this beer. It's actually made here in Mississippi, and it's a pecan beer. And I was really surprised at how much the pecan came through, so I emailed this brewery and I said, how do you get such a pecan flavor in this beer? And they said, well, you crush up pecans and you put them in. So pretty simple. So one of the things that I've always wanted to do, one of my favorite cheat meals is banana nut bread.
Yeah.
And especially banana nut bread that's got some spice to it, you know, nutmeg, allspice, maybe a little cinnamon. So I got to thinking about it, and I decided that I'm going to embark on this experiment. And basically, I'm just going to make banana nut bread in a mead.
Wow, that sounds good.
Yeah, so I'm going to be using... I've got some black locust honey here already, so I'm probably going to use that. But I'm going to use some bananas. I'm going to use some, chopped up pecans and walnuts. Probably some allspice at least, and cinnamon. May throw in some other spices. I don't know. I'm sure there'll be some vanilla beans in there.
Yeah.
Just looking at several different options, I came across a recipe online for something very, very similar, and I don't know who did it. I wish I could give them credit for it, but I don't know who posted this. But they had actually used maple syrup as well, along with the honey, for another layer of flavor. And the one thing that struck me, and I thought of you, JD, when I saw this, in secondary, they threw in 2 ounces of medium toast American oat cubes soaked in cognac.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm thinking banana nut bread, spiced up with a little maple syrup and oaked on cognac soaked cubes.
Oh, man, yeah.
So, that makes me hungry when I talk about it.
mouth's watering over here.
every once in a while, I used to make, you guys are going to kill me for this one, but I used to make, this annual Christmas stuff you get all the time, this fruit bread.
Fruitcake. Oh, the fruitcake,
Yeah, but come on, JD.
The thing that everybody uses for a doorstop.
Yeah. But JD's fruitcake is unlike any other fruitcake you have ever had in your life. I guarantee it. But I haven't made it in a couple of years. A long, drawn-out process. I actually start about midsummer because my fruitcake has to age for about 6 months in order for it to be in prime, condition for Christmas.
But my grandmother used to make a cake, and she would make it in about this time, in like mid-September.
Yeah.
And like once or twice a week, you had to pour this some sort of liquor over it,
yep.
And then.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then it would soak, and it would be and all the way till Christmas. And this thing was like
drunken
cake or something.
I don't use the typical candied little fruit bombs that the people generally use in those little plastic tubs. I use dehydrated fruits, cherries, peaches, apricots. I don't use the typical stuff. And that's what differs, that's a big difference between mine and a lot of the store-bought stuff you get. And of course I make it with various different kinds of alcohol, from rums to bourbons to whiskeys, you name it. I've run the full gamut. Mm-hmm. Cognac, was one that I've made. Cruzan, blackstrap rum was a real popular one. Of course my wife takes it to work with her, and the next thing I know, I'm making fruitcake for like 80 people. So, so the fruitcake thing, I can see where you're going with this banana nut bread. But, bananas, typically when you make like a banana bread, you got to wait till the bananas are like almost black. Is that the same thing, same kind of deal when you're making mead? You just mash them up on a...
If you use bananas in small quantities, they'll add body to a mead, but they won't impart any flavor. To get the banana flavor, you've either got to use a metric shit ton of bananas, or that's a technical term. So
that is I've heard it before. Look it up. Yep.
Yep. Or you can actually slice the bananas up and simmer them in water and then use the water itself along with the bananas. So that's what I plan on doing. That's a little trick that I learned from a guy on YouTube. JD, you saw him. You found the English guy, that was making the wine.
Oh, yeah.
Well, he made a banana wine, and that's how he did it. He simmered the bananas for like 30 minutes, and then you just put it all in, peel and everything. You just slice the bananas up, peeling and all, simmer it, and then you use that water, and that gets the flavor out. So that may be the approach that I take with this.
Yeah, without the mess, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can imagine, like you said, it would take a bunch of bananas and the mm-hmm. mess at the bottom of the bucket. Oh my God. I thought the pizza
metric
was bad.
Shit ton.
Yeah, metric shit ton. Cause I used a metric shit ton of peaches in my peach mead and the mess at the bottom was unbelievable. So,
we'll have to post a conversion chart for that on the website.
Metric shit ton, yeah. Yeah, I'll be sure to do that.
Metric, putting so many pounds in a metric shit ton.
Well, now, the other thing, we kind of touched on it, before we launched the show tonight, we were talking about it. You said you were going to put nuts in it. Pecans, you said, right?
Pecans and walnuts.
Walnuts. Okay, so walnuts are notorious for oil.
Right.
Not so much in pecans, but walnuts. There's a lot of oil in walnuts. So how do you get around that? Because isn't the oil going to give you a rancid type taste?
The brewery who made the pecan beer said that they roasted the pecans first. Okay. So my plan is I'm going to roast these and, roast them fairly dark and chop them up, put them in primary, and then when I get ready to rack, we've got the advantage of knowing that the oils will be on top, so we can rack under that and just be very careful not to bring any of that oil along.
And, there he goes. There he goes with that word again. Oil.
Oil. Yeah. Oil.
Oil.
Sorry. Oil.
Isn't it a pain in the ass to be from the South, Chris?
No, I love it. I love it.
You get corrected on everything you say.
No, because when people don't expect anything from you, when they hear you talk, they automatically deduct 100 IQ points. and they expect nothing from you. So
oh my God.
It's great.
All right. Let's move on here then a little bit. Jeff, you wanted to talk a little bit more about the yeast selection, and we were talking, I think this goes along with the Braggot thing here, the malt and the honey quantities and that kind of
sure.
thing. And you had some ideas on that, right?
Well, yeah, I finally over the weekend got the chance to check on and catch up on the episode that I missed. And there was a discussion as far as the quantity of honey versus the quantity of malt. And whether you wanted to cut back on the malt a little bit or, add a kind of a bare minimum of honey. Yeah. I kind of wanted to throw in my two cents here that I thought was actually a really elegant solution to this problem for when I, scale the kit up to a Braggot, because the kit gave you stuff for a 5-gallon batch.
Right.
And what I did was I just scaled the kit up to a 6-gallon batch. I just scaled the final product to a 6-gallon batch, added enough honey to be more than 50%, and kept the malt where it was. And that actually, the advantage of that is the extra honey didn't make it too high a gravity for the yeast to take off. It kept it around, I think, 10 to 11%. And I didn't lose any of the flavor that I would have potentially compromised by reducing the amount of malt either. The dark, grainy maltiness from the Braggot still really showed through. So all in all, I thought that was a really good solution rather than trying to compromise one or the other, just make a little bit bigger batch.
Now, was that using an ale yeast, or did you switch over to a wine yeast?
Actually, I used an ale yeast, and this is the other thing I wanted to weigh in on a little bit, too. Whether you use a wine yeast or an ale yeast should really depend on whether you're trying to make a Braggot that has the kind of character of a specific type of beer, or whether you're using grains to kind of bump up the feel of the mead. If you're trying to emulate a specific type of beer, you really want to use the ale yeast appropriate to that. Whereas if it's just kind of an addition to a mead, you're safe with using a wine yeast. And actually I read a really interesting article over the weekend that compared ale yeast and wine yeast and their domestication. And it made this point that I thought was actually really clever, that ale yeast are kind of like dogs and wine yeast are kind of like cats. the ale yeast comes in all kinds of...
Send me a link to that article. Well, yeah, that's something I got to read that.
Well, I'll have to find that again. But okay. The basic gist of it is, these ale yeasts, we've domesticated them to do all kinds of different things. They're very specialized. They come in different varieties. Some of them ferment hot or cold. Some of them give you specific off flavors. Like, to make a Hefeweizen, you need a really specific strain of yeast that's going to throw those banana and clove off flavors that are just character to that style. Whereas wine yeast, they're a little bit different, but they all kind of they follow the same basic idea or structure, and they don't really differ nearly as much as the ale yeasts have. That was the general idea.
So, Aaron, I can see. I mean, I can see I can see one of these little long-haired white pussycat sitting next to a big ugly bulldog. That's a picture I got in my mind. You know? You, what yeast did you use again in that braggot that you sent me?
That was D47.
So a wine yeast.
Okay, and my only, it wasn't really a complaint. My only, and it's really neither here nor there, but it was just a wish for a little bit more hops, a little bit more hoppy flavor, a little bit more beerish type flavor. Now, whether that would have come from hops or whatever, but, okay, interesting. So, well, I'm still, you know, I've got my kits ordered. I ordered the bourbon barrel beer from Northern Brewer, and I bought two of them. And I'm going to brew them side by side. One is a beer, the other is a braggot. The only difference between the two is going to be the honey. However, I'm somewhat in a dilemma with the yeast. I don't know. You know, I mean, I guess as far as a mead goes, Jeff, it really doesn't make any difference what yeast you use, right? As long as it's honey.
Well, so. It doesn't. You know, you get some yeast that are a little bit more, you know, character to white wine or a little bit more character to red wine. Yeah. And you're doing a porter, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yes.
The porter braggot that I did before. I used the rye yeast that come in the activator packs? Their Irish ale. Their Irish ale it has a very smooth character to it, and it actually has in the neighborhood of a 14% alcohol tolerance, if I'm not mistaken. Okay. So that might be one worth looking into for you.
Yeah, because we were talking also on the show that, you know, I had said that I really didn't want the alcohol to go much more than about 10%. But then Chris also brought up the fact that, you know what, go full bore. And if you add honey, add honey. Make it to 51%, and whatever the alcohol comes out, that's it.
Right.
I think I'm going to go along with that. So whatever, Chris, you're still good for that, right? You're just going to add the honey and whatever alcohol level it comes to, that's it, right?
I think that's what I'm going to do. I don't know yet. I'm still a little bit up in the air, and I'll tell you why, and I'll have to admit this. I haven't been able to really get my head into this whole braggot thing because I'm not a beer drinker. So, you know, I haven't given it nearly as much thought as I should have. I'm probably way behind you guys. I'm thinking, you know, actually, Jeff, you said 14% on the Irish ale. Most Irish ale yeast, I think, are about 12%.
And I could be mistaken. But it's been like almost 2 years now.
Yeah, I think they're about 12%, but who knows what they're going to do when you start adding honey in.
This is true.
Everything changes. The whole game changes then. So my plan for the moment right now is let this thing go dry. We're going to take it to 12%, let it go dry, finish, and then taste it. And then I'm going to decide what I want to do from there. Yeah. You know, I'm usually against back sweetening, but I'm working with something that I really don't know much about here. So if it turns out that it should have been a little sweetness in there or it needs it based on the way I change the hops up and everything, then we'll just have to make those changes as we go and see what we come up with. But I'm not really so worried about the alcohol content or the ABV as just getting the right balance and good flavor. So whatever the alcohol comes out to be, that's what it comes out to be. And if it's way up there, we'll just have to put a warning on the bottle.
Yeah.
Don't chug the stuff, you know.
You know, if I start passing this out to friends and relatives, it's like, you know what, dude, you only want to drink one of these. This isn't beer. Right?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
You just go to the refrigerator and get a, you know, a couple more bottles. Just drink one.
Yeah, this is not beer.
Yeah. You know. Aaron, have you decided what kind of a yeast that you want to put with your braggot?
You know what I'm leaning towards right now? I think I'm probably going to stick with the D47. I was pretty pleased with the results I got on the last couple braggots that I've done, and I think I may just kind of stick with what's been tried and true.
Yeah. I probably need to get a hold of Patty Mackey and talk to her, because she's done this recipe, this exact recipe, and talk to her about how she, you know, put it together and everything. My concern is, you know, if I stick with the beer yeast, because some of these beer yeasts, frankly, are kind of finicky. And when you toss in a whole bunch of added sugar, sometimes it can send them into a tizzy fit. And, you know, they don't know what the hell to do. So,
yeah, well, you know, Patty seemed to think that the honey in the higher gravity might cause some problems with them stalling.
Yeah.
My experience, very limited experience with beer yeast, has been that they actually end up way overshooting, in a honey must what they normally would in a beer must. So, you know,
well,
yeah, I don't know who's going to turn out to be right here.
Yeah, and then there's, you know, the other thing that we had talked about too, or I think she brought it up, was step feeding the honey. But, you know, how much, how often? I mean, you know, you get into that too, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every 2 points on the hydrometer, every other day on the calendar. I mean, how do you go about just step feeding the honey into your must without...
Well, I would approach that by gravity if I were going to do it that way. I would definitely go by gravity. And I haven't ruled that out on mine yet. But I think the Irish ale yeast is going to handle it just fine. I don't think it's going to be a problem.
Yeah.
Well, the Irish ale yeast is pretty hardy. So.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, as far as my recipe goes, you know, like I said, it's a bourbon barrel porter. It's the one from Northern Brewer, and a lot of positive, tons of positive reviews on this beer recipe. And, you know, as I said, I'm doing side by side. Right now, both my fermenters are empty. Shame on me. I'm going to do them side by side. One's going to be a beer, and one's going to be the mead. My dilemma, okay, was my big dilemma, more than the yeast, was what bourbon do I use? Okay. And that's a real, it almost gave me headaches, okay? because I love bourbon. I love a nice bourbon. I love a good bourbon. I love whiskey. You know, when a guy goes out and makes good whiskey, it's not meant to put in a glass with a whole bunch of other crap and suck it down through a straw. I like my bourbon and my whiskey the way God intended man to drink it, straight up in a proper glass at room temperature. So my search started, you know, about a week. A little more than a week ago, I jumped online and, you know, I mean, I got calluses on my butt sitting here for hours, you know, going through all the Whiskey Advocate and all these different places looking for the proper bourbon, okay? And I settled on two. Of course, I worked myself into another dilemma, because which one of these two I got sitting on my desk am I going to use? So damn it, you know? But I selected Evan Williams Single Barrel 2007 Vintage. has some pretty good reviews. It's a very nice bourbon, very smooth. Oh, man, this stuff is so good. And then I settled also on Eagle Rare, which is made by Buffalo Trace. Now, I love Buffalo Trace. You know, a nice little sip of Buffalo Trace before I go to bed at night is, that's a godsend. That's like having dessert. This Eagle Rare is phenomenal stuff. And these are all under $30 a bottle bourbon. Keep that in mind. Okay, so we're not talking using expensive bourbons here. So now I've got this dilemma, and they're both fantastically good, fantastically good. The Eagle Rare is although it has rye, the mash bill doesn't have a lot of rye in it, and consequently, it's not a harsh bourbon. And if you know anything about bourbon, pay attention to the mash bill, because that'll tell you a whole lot about the flavor profile that you're going to get before you even take a sip. Typically, the wheat bourbons are going to be a little on the smoother side, a little lower in the alcohol, and which consequently makes them a whole lot smoother. Whereas the bourbons that are made with a heavy rye mash bill tend to be a little more harsh. They're going to be your higher ABVs, your higher proofs, 100, 120, on up. So I wanted, my selection, I wanted a bourbon that was going to be smooth and not be overly harsh in the beer or the mead. And so these two selections, the Evan Williams single barrel 2007, these are both around 10-year-old bourbons, and they're both very nice. So that's my bourbon selection for my bourbon barrel project. So, typically Maker's Mark is what everybody uses. Well, I don't care for Maker's Mark at all. That's kind of an everyday bourbon. That's the kind of bourbon you put in a highball or, a mixed drink or something, as far as I'm concerned. So,
yeah, that's the one that put me on the knees in college that time.
Yeah, it's Maker's Mark's got a little bit of a harshness to it that I really didn't. I'm trying to keep
sure
that
does.
Part. Trying to keep that part of it out of the recipe, out of the final product. So
it's really harsh when you're hugging the toilet all night too.
Yeah.
That's the Maker's Mark is the reason I don't drink bourbon to this day.
Well,
and that was back in college. Holy crap.
You know, you should get a bottle of this Eagle Rare. I said it was under $30. Actually, the Eagle Rare, I think it was like $32 for a 750 ml bottle. This stuff is so smooth, you won't even notice it going down.
Dude, after that event, when I smell bourbon, I start to irk. I start to irp when I smell it.
Oh, no, my God, poor guy.
Yeah, I'm telling you, listen, I'm not getting into details, but just trust me, it was bad.
That being said, about, with your bragging, right? I know Jeff's already got his rolling. Any special ingredients? Obviously, I just named two of mine, the bourbon. But, Aaron, any special ingredients you're tossing in the bucket with your braggot?
Nothing that I would say special, but one of the things about this recipe that really jumped out at me is just what looks to me to be kind of an insane amount of hops. And again, the recipe that I'm putting together here is for a black IPA. And this particular recipe calls for a total of 6 ounces of hops. So during the boil, there's 5 ounces added at that point. So there's, 1 ounce of Summit. That goes in for the full 60-minute boil. Another ounce of Chinook for the last 15 minutes. An ounce of Centennial, 10 minutes. Ounce of Cascade at 5 minutes. And then one final ounce of Centennial right at flame out at, 0 minutes. And then an additional ounce of Cascade to dry hop. So that's a lot of hops.
Wow.
Yeah.
I thought I was going heavy because I was going, mine has got a total of 75 IBUs. So I thought I was going heavy, but I think that's got it beat.
Yeah, this has got to be up there. I need to plug this into the, what was that, mybeer.com or. Jeff, you were telling us about that IBU calculator. I got on there and played around with it a little bit, but yeah, I'm not sure what...
Brewer's Friend, maybe?
Brewer's Friend, yeah.
Yeah, there were a few of them out there, and I'm pretty sure they all do a pretty good job. I'd be interested to hear what IBUs you come up with, because like Chris's 75 is in the pale ale range all by itself.
Yeah, I'm just pulling up. Maybe this kit has some information on there. It's basically modeled after the Northern Brewer Black IPA kit. So I'm going to pull that open and see if it lists out. But if not, I'll come back for next week with the calculation on what the IBUs are looking like here.
Yeah, I'm sure people blow 75 away all the time in beer, but I was thinking, trying to preserve some honey character, I think 75 is getting a little bit on up there for me. I don't know. We'll see.
I tried a hop session mead this weekend, and I think my IBUs were somewhere around 23, where hops were supposed to be the main characters. Granted, it's a light beer, or not a light beer, a light mead, and I was trying to go for more of the flowery hops, but that's pretty up there.
Wow. Well, on your braggot, Jeff, did you add anything special, any special ingredients, anything out of the ordinary, extraordinary, extraordinary?
That remains to be seen. I'm actually transferring it to secondary after we get done with this call here. So that's kind of the point where I'm going to do another flavor check and see where I stand with it. I took a sniff of it before we got on the show, and it's smelling pretty excellent. So I may not add anything. I may go and add a little bit of like an herbal adjunct, like a little bit extra hops, some coriander, grains of paradise, star anise, any number of different spices to kind of just either complement or bump up some of the flavors that have come from that yeast.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Chris, you had, you've talked about your Red Irish deal. Is there anything special that you intend to add in there later on or during primary or secondary?
Well, I'm just changing the hop profile. I'm going to just trash the hops that come with the kit. And I'm using Chinook and East Kent Goldings.
Yeah.
So that's really the only change that I'm making to the kit.
Okay.
I guess what I am doing is using blackberry honey because that's what I used with it the first go around when I used only the DME. And it really turned out good even then. So now with the addition of the specialty grains, I'm hoping for a good one.
Yeah. Speaking of the blackberry honey, and I keep forgetting to mention this, but Jeff, that hibiscus project that I did, is starting to come around now.
Excellent.
And, man, is that stuff good. Not overly sweet. It's right on the money. Earthy, velvety, tea-like.
Part of that earthiness might be coming from your you use blackberry honey, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and part of my, that might be from that. I don't get as much earthiness from it on mine, but yeah, it's a really, it's dry, but it's very light, and it just kind of drinks nice and smooth.
Yeah.
I appreciated the hell out of that mead.
I would definitely make this again.
Yeah, that's why I chose the blackberry honey for this project, because to me, an Irish ale has a somewhat of an English ale undertone to it. I guess that's the best way to describe it. And I think that the earthiness from the blackberry just sort of, it just really fits in there with that old Abbey style flavor profile, you know?
Sure does. And your choice of the East Kent Goldings would be a good complement to that, too. Those are also a nice earthy hop.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm using those for aroma. Those will go in like with 5 minutes left in the boil. Yeah. And the Chinooks will be the primary flavoring.
No, I think you've made some good choices there.
You know, touch back on the sizers here for a minute, you know, in our long discussion on apple juice and everything. You know, back in the old days, we're talking back in the 1700s, and I've done a little bit of research. I mean, you know, typically it was cut the apples up, chuck them in a wooden barrel, and put the lid on and leave them sit. That basically, you know, produced your hard cider. Now, it came with whatever yeast happened to be on the apples. So, you know, I guess that depended on where you lived, it might have changed the flavor. But one of the things that I kind of wanted to play with, just as an experiment, is just to get a half gallon or even a gallon of apple cider, apple juice, fresh pressed stuff, and put it in a gallon jug and drop some oak into it. Nothing else. No yeast. No nothing. Just drop some yeast, drop some oak in it. And just leave it sit there for, you know, a month or so. Now, might drop a Camden tablet in it to keep it from, you know, taking off if there is any yeast in it. But I often wondered, you know, what they might have tasted, you know, back in the 1700s when, you know, they didn't have glass jugs. I mean, they simply chucked the apples in a barrel and, you know, that was it. So, just a kind of a simple experiment, you know.
Why don't we just try it and see?
I think I will. I'll go, maybe even go over to Trader Joe's tomorrow and just pick up a gallon of apple juice and put it in one of my gallon carboys and just drop some oak in it and just see what the hell happens.
Or just go by the orchard and pick up, you know, one fresh apple is going to have yeast on it. So get your juice and chop up one fresh apple and toss it in for the yeast and see what happens.
Go ahead and let it ferment?
Yeah, just let it go. See what happens.
I can do that too. Yeah, I can do that too.
It's a wild ferment.
I'm not driving 70 miles out to an apple orchard for one apple.
Yeah, well, if you buy one at the store, it's just going to be wax covered, you know.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's that might be an interesting experiment too. I just might do that. Maybe I can talk the wife into going out to, I'll have to look online and see whether they've got apples coming yet or not. They should be getting real close out there. But
or just send her. You don't have to go.
Yeah.
tell her it's part of the, you know, making her happy thing.
Yeah. And, no, I'm afraid I'll have to go with her. Maybe I'll just do that. Maybe I'll just, like I say, cut up an apple and put it in there and go ahead and let it ferment. See what happens. Drop some oak in it and see what happens. I want to, you know, drop the oak in right from the start because that's the way that, you know, would have done, in a hundreds. So,
I mean, if you want to find out what they had, that's the way to do it. Just throw it all in and let it go.
Yeah, I think might be interesting. See what it comes out, comes out like. So.
Yeah. The other thing to understand here is that when people were doing that an agent a day ago, they were kind of at the mercy of whatever yeast took off and whatever yeast did best. So some years were notably better than others. You may have an off year. You may have a great year.
Yeah, that's true. Absolutely.
Yeah, and people back then were a lot tougher than we are now, so they could drink probably stuff that we couldn't drink.
Well, yeah.
And you being an alcoholic, you're picky anyway.
Yeah, I got a cast iron gut anyway, right?
But you're picky. You know,
I am
you know picky. What you like. So back then, you know, it was... kick your boots up in a saloon and deal the cards and drink whatever was there. So,
well, you know, I mean, when it comes to my bourbon too, I mean, I've had some $100 a bottle bourbons that don't taste any better than $25 bottle bourbon. So, it's all what when it hits your tongue and gets you in your mouth, that's where it all starts. And, that's where you figure out what's good, what isn't good. So just because it's got a pretty label and a hefty price tag, that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be some good stuff. So, but anyway, we've pretty much run the gamut here tonight on the Mead House, guys. I think we covered all the bases. We talked about the apple season, apple sizers coming to us, so we'll probably get a little bit more involved in recipes next week. What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, maybe so. I think it's getting close to time.
Yeah.
If we're going to do this Braggot thing, we need to get that in primary and get it going. So that's probably going to be on the order for this week to get that going. Because, you know, I only have that one bucket.
Yeah. You want me to call your wife and see if she'll advance you your...
No, we'll wait. She's we'll approach that a different way.
Ryan Richardson, he's going to join us next week, guys. I know Aaron doesn't know who this is, but Aaron, we had a guy call the show last week, and
I missed the first caller.
Well, he called one of the first callers
for that matter.
Yeah, and he had a lot of good stuff to talk about, and we asked him if he wouldn't want to be a part of the show, and he said, hell yeah. So he's going to join us as a regular here on the Mead House next week. Ryan Richardson, we'd be glad to have him on board. I know he's going to check the show out here tonight, so Ryan, I sent you an email today, bud. We'll be talking this week for sure. But some interesting stuff that he was doing, and seems like he's pretty well versed in mead making. He's been doing it for a couple of years. What did you see? Like 40 gallons of this stuff or something going on in his basement?
Hey, Aaron, just to get you caught up, just to let you in on the secret, the best coffee mead's not made with coffee. So,
I'm going to have to go and catch up on last week's episode now.
Yeah.
I am
intrigued. Anyway, yeah. So yeah, that, you know, the coffee thing's still going. I still have some coffee mead that's still cooking here. I'm trying to just let it rest. I talk to it nicely every day. It's not like that sourwood thing that I cussed out every other day. Coaxing this little coffee deal. I'm hoping it's going to get better with time. Since time seems to cure a lot of ills in this mead making thing that we're doing. So, but that being said, guys, we've pretty much run the gamut here tonight on the Mead House. What do you say we all get back together around the table next Tuesday night, 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time? Ryan Richardson, he'll be joining us next week. So, with that, see everybody next Tuesday. What do you think?
Sounds good.
Yeah, we'll see you.